Welcome to the Disrupt Education Podcast. I'm Peter Hostrasser, your host. Hey, thanks so much for hanging out with us today. Do me a favor, pass this podcast along to somebody who's interested in disrupting education. That's what we do here. Hit that subscribe button, hit a like button, send me a message. I'd love to hear from you. Also, if you get a chance, head over to disrupteducation.co. It's a great place to see what I'm doing, a little bit of blog action, and some other things around disrupting education. I'm a proud partner of the EdUp Experience Podcast Network, edupexperience.com. You can check out all the innovative education avenues. The podcasts are amazing. Hit that podcast link on there, and you're going to see me and a whole bunch of other awesome podcasts. We are leaders in innovating education on podcasts. Last quick note here, go to unlearningcoach.com. Listen, I help people build their professional portfolios as young people and understand how they can show their value. Just head over there, check it out. If you have a son or daughter or somebody who's looking to figure out what they want to do in life, and you can get into that cohort. Trust me, it's amazing. Unlearningcoach.com. On today's podcast, I have Mark Berkman, who is the executive director of Organization for Social Media Safety, and Ed Peisner, who's the founder of Organization for Social Media Safety. Ed is going to share a story of how his son was a victim of a social media attack, and that motivated these two gentlemen to take action to assist others in helping to make appropriate social media choices for their families. Trust me, this is a serious podcast. However, there's a great ending to it and a place to where you can understand how you, your school, as a parent, as a student, you can stay safer on social media. You don't want to miss this one. I'll be right back with Ed and Mark right after these messages. Are you an individual or business wanting to create an online course or training program, but are overwhelmed with the e-learning process and don't even know where to start? If so, you don't want to miss this free masterclass called Create and Launch a Successful E-Learning Program, Online Course, or Virtual Training, where you will learn the biggest mistake most people make with e-learning, the number one reason most e-learning programs fail, and the three pillars to create extraordinary value for your learners every time, and much more. Get instant access to the free masterclass right now by clicking on the link in the description. All you have to do is sign in and you will get instant access to this free masterclass right now. I recently asked Jake, who is a sophomore in high school, why he uses SpikeView to share his learning journey.
I think it's really cool that, you know, SpikeView is really putting that abstract into concrete data and knowledge and then displaying that to the outside world. And I think SpikeView is different than anything else out there. Like I said before, because it's really taking that, you know, those abstract skill sets and those abstract experiences and putting them into data that, you know, is actually mathematic and scientific and, you know, that matches you up with the best programs and, you know, best places for you. People, you know, who are really trying to make those changes in the world, and they're going to be using SpikeView because SpikeView is that app where you can, you know, take those experiences and take those passions and put them out there and share with other people. And that's, you know, that's really powerful. And that, you know, that professional networking piece, you know, to be with other like-minded teenagers, that puts you ahead. That puts you ahead in a lot of ways. And so, you know, I think anyone who uses SpikeView right now has a leg up in the future, and excited to see, you know, where those SpikeView alumni head up.
Head to SpikeView.com. Start your portfolio now for free. The Disrupt Education vlog can be found on YouTube. To hear it in podcast form, search Disrupt Education on any of the following podcast platforms: Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Breaker, CastBox, Overcast, Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Spotify, or Stitcher. Welcome to the Disrupt Education Podcast. I'm Peter Hostetter. Hey, thanks so much for being here. I've got two great members of the Organization for Social Media Safety. I have the CEO, Mark Berkman, here, and Ed Peisner, the National Education Director and Founder. Gentlemen, thank you so much for hanging out with us on Disrupt Education.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you for having us.
Awesome. Well, let's. You guys get to choose who goes first here, but wanted just a little bit of background of who you are and what you're about, and we'll start with you, Ed. How about that?
Sure, I will jump right in. I'm going to share a story as how we got involved with this, or how I got involved with this and met Mark. This jumps back 4 years to when my then 14-year-old son Jordan Peisner was walking home from school. And he had called me and said he was going to stop. It's going to walk home with his friends and stop at the local fast food restaurant near my house. Very typical Friday. He would do this. And I said, sure, no problem. And I had picked up his little sister at the time, 12 years old. I picked her up. We went home. And I don't know, 20 minutes afterwards, I'd gotten a phone call from one of Jordan's friends that somebody had punched Jordan. That was about the gist of the phone call. Somebody punched Jordan. So I told my daughter, hey, I'll be right back. And something happened. Just, you know, no big deal. I grabbed an ice pack. I drove down the street to where he was. And I came upon what looked like a scene from a movie. You saw a fire truck, an ambulance, police car, just a horde of kids everywhere. And obviously, yeah, my knee, I remember this, my knees went weak. I got chills. I ran to the ambulance. And there was Jordan lying on a gurney, and he was just caked, covered in blood. His shirt was all covered, his face, and his eyes were rolled back. And I looked at him, I looked at the ambulance driver, I said, what happened? I don't understand what's going on. And the paramedic said, Jordan's bleeding internally in his brain. You know, he's got a brain bleed. We have to get him to the hospital now. You got to get out. You could follow us there. That was it. And I jumped out. And as I was walking back to my car, I was asking the kids, I said, what the heck happened? I don't understand. And everybody came up to me with their smartphones and they said, look, and they showed me a video. And here is Jordan talking to his friend in the video. And then you see this boy walking up behind him and with all his might, just punching Jordan in the side of the head. And he, you know, his beanie pops off, he hits the floor. It's a sound that I still, whenever I hear it, Mark's heard this for years now. Whenever I get chills, I have to stop because it just stops me in my tracks. Jordan was taken to the local hospital. He was airlifted to Children's Hospital in Los Angeles. He spent 6 days there. Some of those days were in the ICU. He had a 15-millimeter internal hematoma, which was, you know, we were talking to neurologists about brain surgery and all the things no parent ever wants to hear. And you know, thankfully, Jordan is still with us today. He was released. It was a long road to recovery. And after we got out of the hospital, I did some, you know, news interviews, and I knew something had to be done about this, and I couldn't just sit there. And I contacted my local assembly member, you know, right here in where I live, and his chief of staff at the time was Mark Berkman. And I introduced myself, and Mark said that we started talking. Mark had said that he had seen the video of Jordan being punched within hours after it happened. So obviously, you know, that shows the viral nature of how things happen today with social media. And it was that really that connection, that interaction right there that started this entire, that was our why, correct? That was how this whole thing began. And that was how I became the accidental advocate, you know, turning a mess into a message. And I met Mark, and Mark just, we got together and we knew something had to be done. And obviously with Mark's background, we were able to do a lot. And I'm going to sort of turn it over to Mark to let you know where we've gone from there.
Yeah, we had this conversation prior to the podcast, and it was like, wow, doing something with this. And we'll unpack that a little bit more. But Mark, you came on, and you know, do you want to describe the path, basically a little bit about who you are, but then the path from when Ed and you connected and move this forward to start the organization?
Of course. So as Ed mentioned, this horrific video the attack on Jordan was in my inbox within 2 to 3 hours. That's how viral it went, which is an indication of where we've gone with these attacks happening on social media. And so, as I had said, I was able to meet him about 2 to 3 weeks later after Jordan had stabilized. And it was very clear that he was committed to doing something about this. And it was clear in our office that we were very disturbed by it. And we thought that it was a larger issue that could potentially be legislated. And so we did some research and we found that social media motivated violence is what we call this now, attacks committed for the purpose of filming them and putting them up on social media, that they had essentially doubled every year since the birth of major social media in 2006, when you could find 4 to 6, I believe, of these attacks in 2006. And you fast forward to where we were in 2016, and you could find hundreds hundreds and thousands of these videos on social media being viewed by literally millions, a lot of them young adults, tweens, and teens, which is horrifying. So we drafted and developed what came to be known as Jordan's Law, the first law, state law in the country to deter social media motivated violence. And we ended up passing that in less than a year, which is very fast for a piece of legislation. And it just goes to show that everyone recognized this growing danger and that something needed to be done. While we were working on that legislation, it also became very clear, typically as a legislative staffer, you rely on an organization, some sort of association as your subject matter expert, because you cover a lot of different issues and you need to turn to someone who just handles one issue day in, day out. Unfortunately, there was no one there who was handling social media motivated violence. There was also no one acting, which is shocking to us, no one acting as a consumer protection org focused exclusively on social media. And this is despite the fact that, again, in 2016, when we were talking, it was very clear that cyberbullying via social media had exploded. This was 2016, so Russia's efforts with misinformation and propaganda to impact our democratic elections was becoming clearer. Human trafficking, I had just come out of, I'd worked with the foster youth sector for a few years. Human trafficking via social media, particularly impacting foster youth, was also exploding. Hate speech, there's a long list of dangers that had become clear were being propagated or exacerbated through social media, and no consumer protection organization working on these issues with a focus specifically and expertise on how they were being propagated through social media. So we, Ed and I, founded the organization for social media safety. We are the first consumer protection org focused on social media. We protect against all of these social media related dangers. We do that through a comprehensive approach that includes education. So we are in schools across the country, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a second, teaching students and parents and educators essential social media safety skills. We do advocacy work. So we work on public policy at all levels of government to enhance social media safety, and we do tech development. So we work on software and apps that provide real-time action against any and all social media related dangers.
There's a lot to unpack there. Number one, congratulations. I mean, it's great when people can take a tragedy like this and really just act on it and move on it. But you've layered this up beyond the violence and you know, you talked about human trafficking, you talked about misinformation, all these things. And now we have a place to where we can actually teach youth about that. Let's start to unpack a little bit, like what take one or two of those items that you can provide and maybe share a story of, you know, this is what we do, this is how we've brought in an organization, and this is the result. What kind of results and what areas are right now? Because we came out of a pandemic, so we learned even more a lot about the way that social media can be really, I mean, it can be used as a weapon. So I like to say we should use social media for good, but also I think we have to check out those areas, obviously, and teach people about about how you can really handle it in a better way, and no better way to do that with the youth. Yeah, let's unpack a couple of those things. What are some of the things? Pick one or two of those, and tell us a little bit about, you know, what does that look like? So a school or an entity signs up, what does that look like?
Of course. I mean, just taking, starting with your statement there about using social media for good, I'll say philosophically, we certainly believe that social media is not going anywhere, that there are benefits to it. So our goal is not to eradicate social media. We do believe that you can maximize safety, and it takes this model that we've set up, these three activities of education, advocacy, and tech to do that. So in terms of the education piece, we're actually announcing this on Tuesday. We've just partnered with another national nonprofit called DARE, excuse me, to expand our national outreach. So we'll be in this coming school year up to 75% of school districts with our educational programming. So what that looks like from our side is we go to schools. Ed does this. He's on a permanent tour of the world's worst motels across the country. And we go in, he's there for the full day. So we rotate usually by grade students in and out. And he teaches a 50-minute presentation on essential social media safety skills to students. What that means, the goal of that really, number one, two goals, is to raise awareness around these dangers. A lot of our tweens and teens are just not aware of the various dangers that they can encounter on social media. And contrary to popular educator and parental opinion, if our children are aware of a danger and can still derive the benefit, they're most likely going to rationally avoid that danger. So we want to make sure that they're aware of all these dangers. Number two, should they encounter these dangers, we want to make sure that they understand how to safely react to them, or best case scenario, how to prevent coming across the danger in the first place. So those two big goals there, those are the student presentations. And we found, again, unlike some of the private sector work being done out there, or even some of the other orgs, we found that in 50 minutes, we can pack in the most severe and most common dangers to teach the kids about in that one assembly. So we found it's very effective. We also do our parent workshop, which is an hour and a half, and we teach parents, again, same goals, raising awareness and then teaching your kids either how to successfully avoid these dangers or to most safely respond to them when they encounter them. Exactly. And then we do consulting with schools as well to enhance policies around social media safety.
What I was going to ask you, Ed, is as the director of the National Education Director and bringing these in, what does it look like? So from a school point of view, so there's a parent workshop, you know, as Mark said, it's an hour and a half, you're working on these things. So how do schools actually bring this in? Do they have like an assembly? I'm sure there's different ways they bring it in. What do those things look like? Is it part of curriculum? I can see this in a lot of different places.
Usually it's the assembly. That's what we have found is most effective. They typically do it during like the PE classes. They'll bring each class in one at a time into the hall, the assembly room, wherever they have it. And I present to the kids throughout the entire day. I'm there usually all day, period after period, presenting to the kids. The kids actually love it. It does open their eyes. You know, I start off with, you know, this is not me with the bucket taking all your cell phones and no one's got social media anymore. It's just education, right? It's just, and I talk with them, not at them. I don't stand up on a podium, behind a podium on a stage with suit and tie. I'm walking around, I'm looking at them, I'm chatting with the kids. And then, of course, the parent one is done in the same room, typically at nighttime, and all the parents come in, and we do about a 90-minute session. And I've had, which is amazing, I've had kids come up to me and say, that was so great. What time is it tonight? I want to bring my parents back. And that is, you know, a testament to what we have here, because for a child to say they want to bring their kids, their parent back to an education program about social media on their phone, it's really eye-opening to them. So, I mean, Mark obviously handles a lot of the setup of how we get into all the schools nationally. And I couldn't do that. I just travel. I go where Mark tells me to go and go to the hotel and go to the school and go back. And that's my, That's my life.
Yeah. I mean, well, sharing your story, and you know, with those students, like, there's nothing better than that, right? I mean, even as an educator, that's a wonderful asset to have when your student is like driving the learning for their own parents, and talk about a place to get to where, you know, mom, dad, you know, aunt, uncle, grandma, grandpa, this is what this looks like. Because I know as a parent, even as an educator, you know, you ask those questions at the dinner table and everything was great today. You know, you don't get that. So I love the fact that you're putting this entity together to get that message out and have it led by students, even in some cases. Do you work with them? Are there projects that they do, or what is a typical day with students look like? Is there storytelling? Is there and what do they come away with? Is there like a value piece or something like that?
There's no what do they come away with? They come away with tools. Right, tools and knowledge. We open their eyes to some of the things that are out there. There are, you know, for the younger kids, there are sneaky people on social media. For the middle school kids, the high school kids, you know, we teach them how to audit their pages to make sure that they're aware that colleges are going to be looking at your social media feeds, and employers might be looking at your social media feeds. So they come away with some tactics, some tools, how to. And I'm going to leave this to Mark to tell you the ones that he loves. But really, how to handle social media safely, right? As Mark mentioned, you can't avoid a danger if you don't know the danger exists. So that's really here. We're opening their eyes to what's out there, how to manage it, you know. And we say throughout the presentation, no child wants to be on social media 6, 7, 8 hours a day. You know, they know that they're sort of stuck in this addictive, you know, social media feed. So we try to help them break from that and give them some tools to break from that. We do give the parents a checklist at the end of the presentation. There is our website, obviously. There's a lot of interaction with the kids too. We do have an interactive piece where we'll ask them questions and have anonymous clickers in their hands where they can answer questions. And we're working as a team. They're actually seeing the answers up on the screen when I project it on them with the projector. So they're actually involved. They're not just sitting there nodding their head. You know, they're actually involved answering questions, and I'm walking around talking to them, and it's really good.
That's wonderful. I love that interactive piece, because I've seen a lot of things like that where the kids are interacting and they actually start to feel a safe space, and that's wonderful. So let's Mark, what levels are we looking at here? Are we looking at K through 12, K through 16? How does a school get involved? Before we get into that, though, I got to ask you, because Ed set you up there, what is some of your favorite pieces and entities that happen in these times?
What we want, so at the 10,000 foot level, what we want parents and educators to understand is when it comes to preventative safety, you need a system. When you are going to go on a flight, your pilot has a checklist ahead of time, organized by experts, thought out, where they can go through it one by one to make sure you have a safe flight. With all the dangers going on social media, and we've mentioned a bunch, the cyberbullying, human trafficking, hate speech, sex crimes, long list, parents need this system. And we found, because parents and educators, we did not grow up with social media, this is confusing, and rightfully so. And so we created the Buckling the Social Media Seatbelt System for parents and educators to think about. And there are three activities there. One is these conversations. We've talked about this a bunch already, that raising awareness is critical. Don't underestimate it. Your social media safety rules supplies both to parents and schools. Make sure that you have clear rules, preferably written out ahead of time, that you want your children to follow, students to follow, every time that they're using social media or every time they come across a certain circumstance. And then three is calibrating the setting. So making sure that our devices and social media apps have the settings calibrated at the appropriate safety level for our children in terms of privacy, in terms of time settings, in terms of which apps they're allowed onto. So those three together are the system. We have checklists, as Ed mentioned, for the conversations, to be had. We have templates for the rules and we have tutorials for the settings, all available for free on our website. This is also what we go over with the parent workshop, and it's what we enhance for when we go over the consultant. I should add too that and mention the clickers that we have. The wonderful thing about the clickers is we've enhanced the power of them. So we get this anonymous data from the students. That means that not only are we increasing engagement, but we can flag for the schools certain problem areas. So we'll know, it, for instance, for the older grades, if sexting is an issue. We were at a school pre-pandemic and 65% of the students reported that they had been sexting. So we can red flag for that school and help them work on interventions, which are very effective, because then the school is aware of what's going on and what they need to work on. So yeah, that's the tips at the 10,000 foot level. One basic tip that we want everyone to know is a tip called block and report. So making sure that our children, when they come across harmful content, they're blocking the person that sent that content to them, and they're reporting the content to the platform. This does two important things. One, it helps the whole community get harmful content off of social media. So, you know, in this day, for example, with racism, we're all contributing to an anti-racist atmosphere. Number two, by making that a rule and having them do that each time they come across harmful content, we're bolstering their mental defenses against it. So 6 hours a day, this content's running through the screen, we're trying to prevent that from becoming normal to them, from becoming normalized. So very important tip there.
And I can tell you from a school's point of view, that is super important. I think a lot of the times, and in being in education for 20 years as a high school educator, unfortunately, a lot of the times that these, just kind of like you saw Ed's incident with his son, it comes through and no one knows what happened. And then parents start talking and different things. You're giving them those tools to actually start that community conversation. Everybody becomes a stakeholder into this. And I love that. Now, you mentioned a little bit, and this goes into my second question, the different levels. So we do, you know, K through 12, K through 16.
Oh, yes.
So no, it's okay.
Yes.
And unpack that, and where do these things come into play? I've always been a fan of the earlier the better. But obviously there are some, you know, social issues where, you know, do you teach sexting to a second grader or something like that? I mean, I don't know what that answer is, and I'm not here to judge. I'm just saying, like, what are those levels?
Well, the short answer on the sexting, no, we teach sexting. It's up to the school. So our presentations are customizable based on the particular community. The issues that communities deal with can be different. So sexting is typically sixth grade and up. Our presentations are fifth through 12th. We don't go below fifth. We found it's not as effective for what we do, and we don't want children under fifth on social media. So it's a bit of a mixed message for specifically what we do. There are, like, our work with DARE is going to be K through 12. It's going to focus on certain specific principles. DARE is a short form presentation with the law enforcement officer of about 6 to 8 minutes, and then there's an activity and discussion. But our work is fifth grade and up. Now, when we do parent workshops, we attract parents through the full K through 12 spectrum, because this is a concern. Parents are curious. The more that they know earlier, the better that they can protect their children from it. And we found, you know, the more likely parents are, if they go to our presentation K through third or fourth, the more likely they're going to make sure that the social media apps that their children are using are appropriate for their children's age level.
Congratulations on the DARE thing too, because I do know that organization. It's a very big organization as well. With that being said, then, say I'm a parent, I'm a school, even a student who wants to bring you into an organization. How do they do that? What are the steps to bringing your organization for social media safety to them?
Appreciate that question. We've tried to keep the bureaucracy to an absolute minimum. So, and it's been hard and well thought out, we think, on our part in terms of facilitating us being able to go to a school. So it's really just a matter of, you can go to our website, which is ofsms.org, short for Organization for Social Media Safety. And you can shoot us an email, you can find our contact information on the site, or give us a call. and we find an open date and get it going. There's no contract to sign. We send an invoice and the school pays when we arrive, and that's really it. It's a matter of finding an open date.
And Ed, your story is the first time we met and we conversated about that story. I can imagine that is pretty much the story that is going to capture everybody and put a real look to that. And then, you know, these students, the parents, these communities are really going to understand that. So from that point of view, I really want to just say thank you so much for sharing that story. I know that's got to be a difficult thing every time. I know, you know, as we've talked about it, and feeling good about actually doing something and moving things forward. I look for a lot of different things because you know that these detrimental things in social media are going to continue. How do you all stay on top of that and continue to build? Because unfortunately, in the world we live in, there's something closed off, something else comes in, and that. So what are some of the things that you see right now that might be something coming up that is something that needs to be addressed in social media?
Yeah, I love that question because this is really the focus. We created a consumer protection org focused on social media. It's how the first question was, how do we build an infrastructure where we are geared towards becoming the world's foremost expert in social media safety, which we've become, and how do we continue to increase that expertise for the reason of anticipating, this is an evolving danger, right, social media. How do we anticipate the new social media related dangers coming into the pipeline? And so every piece of programming that we do is not only geared towards providing our expertise out into the world, but also receiving it. So as we mentioned, we do the education work and we collect data, anonymous data, where we can learn each time Ed goes to a school, each time we're doing an educational program. We do advocacy work where we are talking to all the top stakeholders globally. And so not only are we pushing legislation, but we're learning from the top stakeholders and refining the work that we do. We work with the top tech companies in the world too. We work very closely with a safety software provider, third-party safety software provider called Bark, which we do recommend to schools and parents. And we learn their needs and what they need to be successful. So all of this is geared towards not only providing expertise, but receiving it too. So what's in the pipeline, I should say too, we have a world-class advisory council that helps us out on all this work. So in terms of what's in the pipeline, we're very concerned about this new technology called deepfake technology. This is the ability to take anyone's likeness and stick it into a video that a person has nothing to do with, basically insert them. And it looks hyper realistic and also can be incredibly dangerous. So we've seen deepfakes being used for propaganda to interfere with elections. We have already passed legislation that we helped develop in California to try to deter that. We are also seeing it most commonly being used to stick women's likenesses into pornographic videos, obviously without their consent. So it's being used for that purpose against female celebrities most often, but also it's trickled down to non-public people like women business owners, women in child custody cases, getting divorces, women journalists. And it's really just a matter of time before this penetrates into high schools and middle schools. And so we have developed legislation also in California as well to criminalize that activity. So that's one of the emerging dangers that we're very concerned with. There's a number of others as well that we're keeping an eye on and seeing how we can get ahead of the curve, which is really the whole name of the game. And a lot of that is, again, that's education, public policy, and tech. We're using all three of those to combat the emerging dangers.
I really like the fact that, you know, you're actually learning with everybody, you know, in the community and collecting that data. That's super important. I think there's a lot of organizations who unintentionally forget that part. So that's a wonderful thing to do, because that's exactly how us educators should, two generations, maybe three out now, of these youth. And it's so important. Gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for telling your story and telling us all about the organization for social media safety. It's ofsms.org. And if anybody, any of the listeners, parents, students, educators, this is you want to talk cutting edge of the place to where, you know, it is a consumer safety piece. I know I'm going to be using it in my financial literacy and business courses as we talk a lot about social media as well. But thank you all. Thank you both for being here for us and the audience on Disrupt Education.
Thank you for having us, Peter.
Thank you so much, Peter.
And to the listeners, we'll catch you next time. Thank you so much for being here.